Hey, Chad, you want to watch a movie?
Yeah.
How about...
No, not again.
Okay, what about...
I just saw that last week.
Okay, oh,
I got it.
Wait. You want me to watch what?
So what'd you think of Romancing the Stone?
A surprisingly joyful romp through the Colombian jungle.
Ain't it just?
Little bit disappointed that the box art never happened in the movie.
Fair. So, welcome everybody to You Want Me to Watch What? Where Chad and I recommend movies to each other that the other hasn't seen. We've seen a lot of movies over the years, and sometimes some slip through the cracks.
Whew, don't they just?
Yeah. This week's selection is the, I believe, 1984 Kirk Douglas, Kathleen Turner, Romancing the Stone, a Robert Zemeckis film.
This is what got him able to do Back to the Future.
Yep.
And if you don't hear Alan Silvestri in the soundtrack, you ain't listening.
Yes. Yes. I hadn't seen this movie in a long time. So as I was rewatching it, I'm like, oh, Zemeckis directed this? Silver Street. Oh, I forgot DeVito's in this. You know, it's just kind of.
Danny DeVito is always a surprise and a delight when he shows up.
I'm just like, suddenly it's like, oh, that's right. This is a delightful movie. So, Joan Wilder, Kathleen Turner, is a successful but lonely romance novelist. The movie actually starts off with this Western scene. Bad guy kicks in the door. The fair damsel is forced to give over her money and potentially other things, but she flicks a knife from her garter belt, hits the guy square in the stomach. She takes off and runs and meets up with her beloved. And as they embrace, we come out of this to see Joan clacking away at her typewriter. And this is the end, crying, just crying at how beautiful the thing she just wrote is. looking for Kleenexes all over the place, finds a note that says buy tissues and uses that to blow her nose.
Set the tone more than the Western thing.
That did. My spouse was watching it with me, and the movie starts. She's like, this is not what I expected. I'm like, just wait. Keeps going. This is not just wait. And then the typewriter scene hit. She's like, oh, yes. So, as I said, Joan is a romance novelist, and she's just completed work on her newest book. A very emotional process. And the next day she gets up and gets ready to go take it to her publisher. While on the way, she gets a package from her brother-in-law, which is weird because he's dead. Apparently, her sister, Gloria, and her husband had been down in South America, and, well, they really only found part of him.
Yuck.
Yeah, they never say which part. And so this mysterious package, while confusing, has to wait till later because she's late for an appointment. So she takes it and her manuscript and goes. In the meantime, somebody shows up and starts to ransack her apartment. She comes back, finds the apartment a mess, is very distraught and about to call the police when the phone rings. And it's her sister saying that she's been kidnapped. The package she got is what is the ransom, and she needs it. She needs to bring it down to Cartagena, Colombia, in South America. She's in New York City.
Also, you have never seen a less capable person for the jungle.
Yes, she is very much a city girl from an 80s city girl. She doesn't go anywhere that's not in high heels and a dress. You know, she's a conservative you know, city girl, but a city girl nonetheless. So even her publisher is like, you are not equipped to do this. And she's like, I have to. So she gets in a taxi, gets on a plane, lands in Cartagena, Colombia.
Lands and, in Cartagena.
Cartagena, yeah. And the shift of this poor woman's worldview is instantaneous as she's wandering through the airport. So she doesn't speak any Spanish, any language, any other language than English. And she's trying to figure out which bus will get her to Cartagena. And a tall gentleman says, well, it's this bus right here. It's not. It's going to take her elsewhere. In the meantime, Danny DeVito, who is one of the kidnappers, sees her get on the wrong bus and can't stop her before the bus takes off. Danny DeVito has a hell of a time in this movie. Let's just get that out there right now.
He absolutely does. You know, this movie would be a whole lot different if they'd gotten Joe Pesci. You know, Danny DeVito makes that role his own.
Yes. Yes, he does. Turns out the gentleman in question who diverts her is one Colonel Zolo. He is, he's not police, but he is.
Mm-hmm.
He's South American, militaristic, has the funds to have his own police force, and no one's going to stop him. He wants the map. Okay. He knows that she has it, and he wants it. So this bus travels through the night, and the next day, next morning, she wakes up. The bus is still going. They're nowhere near civilization. She freaks out. The bus crashes, and everybody just kind of gathers their stuff and leaves. Zolo says, well, another bus will be by. You know, we have schedules to keep here. And as soon as everybody else is out of earshot, he pulls a gun on her. Enter Michael Douglas.
Wouldn't have been my first choice.
No.
To be fair, so, wasn't the studio's first choice either.
Oh, well.
He was their sixth choice.
Oh. Okay, well, we'll circle back to that trivia in a minute.
Okay.
So, a shootout happens, Zolo runs off, and now it's just Joan and guy by the name of Jack Colton. And he's pissed because the bus crashed into his truck, getting rid of all of his birds. Half a year's work gone. And he's just pissed. As only Michael Douglas can be.
Yeah.
So Joan offers him money to get her to a phone. She's got to contact the kidnappers and say, there's been an issue. I'm, you know, whatever. So after some tense negotiations, he agrees. And they start wandering through the jungles of Colombia. In a downpour. Because that's what happens.
Yeah.
There's a scene where they hit a landslide and they go sliding down into, you know, down a mountain and whatever.
The landing was particularly humorous.
The landing was particularly humorous. They go on trying to get to civilization. They end up in a small town that is run by a drug lord named Juan. Now, things don't look good for our heroes because these people don't want Americans there because it's a drug dealer's town.
Mm-hmm.
Jack casually drops her full name, to which Juan, the drug lord, goes, Joan Wilder, the writer? Oh my God, I read my book. I read your books to these guys every Saturday night. Come in, come in, come in. I'm your biggest fan.
I love Juan.
So they go in. There's no phone. He doesn't like phones. But he agrees to drive them. Well, the people in the town say that Juan has a car. And he's like, I don't have a car. I have a little mule. It is a jacked up Jeep that he calls his little mule. This sucker can go through anything and does.
My little Pepe.
My little Pepe. So about this time, Zolo and his troop show up. So there is a getaway scene with Juan and Joan and Jack fleeing the fleeing this, you know, militaristic scene. Beautiful. The whole time, Juan is just enjoying life. He's getting shot at, but he doesn't care. They make their getaway. And Joan and Jack specifically realizes that the map, they are on track to follow what this map is leading to. Joan realizes it too, but doesn't say anything. They get to a town. Romance is absolutely blossoming this night. In fact, they end up making love. And he says, you know, we could just go get the treasure, and then you have a better bargaining chip. So that's kind of the plan. The next day, Zolo's guards show up, and they sneak out of the hotel, drive away, and they find the end of the map. It is this massive emerald worth several fortunes. Well, the whole time, Danny DeVito has been trailing him, and they hijacked Danny's car, or, what was his name?
Which guy? Ira?
Ira, yeah. Yeah, Danny DeVito's character, Ira.
Oh, Danny DeVito's is Ralph. Sorry, I had him
back. Ralph, Ralph. They hijack Ralph's car while he's asleep in the back, so he just is all along for the ride. They find the stone. He steals it from them. As they're leaving the cave that was in the, that this was in, Zolo's army shows up. Ralph runs for it. They get in the car, chase Ralph down, get the stone, and continue fleeing.
Poor
this
Ralph.
Causes them, I know, this causes them to land in a river, which then goes over a waterfall. Yeah. They jump out of the car at the last second and get separated on either sides of the river. Joan is convinced that this was all planned by Jack. He just wanted the stone for himself because he's on one side of the river with the stone, and she's on the other side with the map, which is useless now. So he tells her, look, follow the sunset, get to Cartagena, go to the hotel, I'll meet you there. She goes, she calls the kidnappers, and they instruct her to take a ferry over to this little island. We'll make the exchange there in 2 hours. She does, they do, and as her and her sister are leaving, they're stopped by Zolo, who followed Jack to the hotel. Jack was going to keep his word. He showed up at the hotel, and then so did Zolo. So now is this massive fight between the kidnapper's crew and Zolo's crew. And Zolo gets his hand on the emerald, and then his hand is bitten off by a crocodile.
Look at them snappers.
Look at them snappers. And so Joan and her sister are fleeing from Zolo, who is chasing after them in a rage. Jack is going after the crocodile.
It's got what he wants.
It's got what he wants. He ends up abandoning the crocodile to save Joan, who didn't need saving because by the time he got to her, she'd taken care of Zolo. She not only stabbed him, she hit him, set him on fire, and threw him to crocodiles.
Well, you know, she's a novelist. Sometimes they can't figure out the ending to their story.
That's true. So Jack catches up, is glad she's okay, and then hears sirens coming in the distance because, you know, that's what happens next in a plot like this.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, well, Columbia police and I don't get along well, so you're going to be just fine. And then dives off the wall into the river.
Mm-hmm.
And
Cut to
Joan back in New York handing in another manuscript, which is a fictionalized version of what happened in her trip south.
And her publisher openly weeping.
Her publisher openly weeping. And it's like, and the turnaround time was so fast on this. Where do you get your inspiration? So Joan makes her way back to her apartment, and you can tell that she's more confident in herself than she was at the beginning of the movie.
Yep.
And so she rounds a corner to her apartment, and there out front is a gigantic sailboat on a trailer with the sails fully extended.
Because that's legal in New York.
Because that's legal in New York. Throughout the movie, Jack has been carrying a picture of a sailboat just like this because that is his end goal, to get enough money to buy a boat and sail the world. And sure enough, out steps Jack. He helps her up on board, and the camera work here is really good, very precisely showing off his new alligator crocodile skin boots.
Oh, yeah.
Alligator skin boots.
Oh, yeah.
Apparently the crocodile that had these suffered a fatal set of indigestion from swallowing the jewel.
Mm-hmm.
They kiss, and the movie ends as the trailer hauling this sailboat, sails fully extended, starts traveling down New York City streets.
Mm-hmm.
Credits. So, talk to me, my friend. What were your impressions of this romantic comedy from the 80s?
I'm really glad that I stuck with it past the opening Western scene.
Fair.
I have no expectations going into it, right? You know, I'm not trying to... I try not to read anything about them before I watch them. I just...
Same.
All right, we're going to go in, we're going to watch... Let's see what's going on here. And I'm listening to this and like, oh God. Oh no. Come on.
What hath Justin done?
Is this whole thing supposed to, like, I knew it was supposed to be an adventure thing with, you know, I knew that, you know, with Michael Douglas and so forth. I knew it wasn't going to be a Western.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I'm like, is the whole thing narrated? Is it going to be one of those things? Is the comedy built around the idea that all of the lines are way over dramatic and horribly written? You know, like I didn't know where the humor was. What was I in for?
Yeah. Yeah.
And so I was quite happy when it kind of went into the other. It is an excellent example of the adventure movie. So much so that I had to double check because so many of the beats seem to come from like Indiana Jones and so forth. This was written before Indiana Jones. Like it wasn't made before Indiana Jones, but it was written like 5 years before the first Indiana Jones movie, which goes kind of to show because that was Lucas's whole thing. You know, when he was making up when he was writing Indiana Jones, was he was stealing every single piece of adventure serial, you know, kind of every single trope he could to make like the most tropey adventure thing that would be good.
Yeah.
And so I wanted to double check. I'm like, was this a ripoff of Indiana Jones? No, no, it was not. In fact, the writing of it predates it by a fair number of years. It's just that Indiana Jones is so generic that just about every adventure movie is going to look like it's aping it.
Yes.
And so I thought that Michael Douglas was just wonderful in it. He did a really, you know, I really enjoyed kind of his growly, you know, bit about it.
Surliness.
But Kathleen Turner's the one that surprised me, you know, because I'd seen her in a couple of other things before, and it's just, yeah, she always has kind of, well, I guess I shouldn't say always. She was the voice of Jessica Rabbit.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's where the voice is for me and the confidence and so forth of that. And so watching her be this very mousy character at the very beginning and through most of the film,
Yeah.
Like, it's not until she's rescued her sister that she actually kind of takes that,
mm-hmm.
that part. And so, really well done kind of hero's journey for her.
Mm-hmm.
And I enjoyed that. The comedy, of course, was spot on. The lines were moving so fast. It was so well thought, you know. It was the only screenwriting credit for the person who wrote it, Diane Thomas. She was a waitress in Malibu. She pitched the script to Michael Douglas, who bought it from her for like $250,000.
Yeah, it is a Michael Douglas production.
Mm-hmm.
Of a Robert Zemeckis film.
Yep.
See, that's why it surprised me when you said he wasn't the first choice, because I'm like, he produced the thing.
He did, but Christopher Reeve turned it down. Sylvester Stallone turned it down. Clint Eastwood turned it down. Jack Nicholson turned it down. Paul Newman turned it down. And Michael Douglas, I guess, just kind of hit that point. He's like, fine. We'll do it now.
I'll do it.
But I mean, even Joan, the first choice for Joan was Deborah Winger. You know, she just come off of Terms of Endearment.
Yeah.
And so they were looking for somebody like that. But again, according to legend, like, she was approached about it at a dinner, and the dinner did not go well. And the story went that Michael Douglas went to kind of pitch the movie to her at a dinner, and Douglas claims that she bit him. And so he didn't offer her the role.
Ah, well, you know.
And while we're getting into fun fact stuff, Danny DeVito, I cannot imagine anyone else being in that role.
No.
But it was first offered to Bob Hoskins. Who would go on to act, you know, take the lead human role in, you know, Who Framed Roger Rabbit.
Yeah.
But it's like, that would have been a different take.
Yes, absolutely. So this movie right here is my core Danny DeVito memory. Like, this is where I remember him from first.
Okay. Mine is Batman Returns.
Exactly. You know, that's the clearest one in my mind, but I remember watching this before Batman Returns.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, oh, wow. And so when he makes the joke about Batman coming back to the Batcave, I'm like, in 7 years, he would be in Batman.
Mm-hmm. So, but this is peak 80s filmmaking.
Mm-hmm.
Where the bits that are problematic insofar as they were problems of the 80s. They weren't accentuated. They weren't made bigger or smaller or whatnot. No. And even then, they're tropey problems, right? Mm-hmm. The mousy, you know, the mousy heroine who has to, you know, earn her badass, you know,
yeah,
merit badge, I guess.
Yeah,
kind of thing. Instead of her kind of. As a successful author, you know, it's like, So anyway, the little pieces and bits like that, but it's so good. I mean, watching this, I would happily watch this again, like not on consecutive weekends, but
no,
like a couple months down the road, somebody's like, hey, what do you think about Romancing the Stone? Yeah, I'll watch that again.
Did you know they made a sequel?
I do. Jewel of the Nile.
Yeah, Jewel of the Nile.
There was supposed to be a trilogy called the Crimson Eagle, but Jewel of the Nile underperformed.
Yeah. I don't remember this one as well. I remember seeing it, and it got Michael Douglas and Kathleen Turner and Danny DeVito ball back, but I don't remember it as well. So
it didn't do as well.
Yeah, like most sequels, it doesn't hold up to the first one.
Mm-hmm. So after Alan Silvestri, he was only supposed to do placeholder music for this. Zemeckis yes. liked it so much, he used Silvestri for every single movie that he did from then on.
Uh-huh.
So, that's just, it's glorious.
There's your underdog story for the day.
Yep.
Oh.
The studio heads were so convinced it was going to be a flop that they preemptively fired Zemeckis from doing Cocoon and gave it to Ron Howard.
Okay.
That worked out well for Ron Howard. Cocoon was a very good movie.
Yeah. And it probably worked out well for Zemeckis because he went on to do other projects.
He went on to do Back to the Future.
Future, yeah.
Probably. You know, it's a toss-up for me whether Back to the Future or Who Framed Roger Rabbit is his better movie.
Yeah.
They're very different movies. I understand mm-hmm. that. But in terms of seeing the evolution of a filmmaker.
Yeah.
Ooh, that one's rough. All right.
All right. That's all I've got.
Yep.
Do you have any other thoughts on the movie?
See it.
Awesome. It's a see it for me too.
What? And pay attention to it. There's a lot of jokes that go very quickly.
Yes.
And you got to be. It's like a Naked Gun movie. You got to be paying attention, otherwise you're going to miss the joke.
Yes. All that being said, enough about the movie. Real quick, Extra Life is coming up.
Mm-hmm.
It's end of August right now at the release of this, but October is coming up fast.
It is indeed.
So go to our link at geekcavepodcast.com, follow the links for Extra Life, and if you can donate, please do. I believe it's your turn for a movie.
I think it is.
Hello, meet Popsicles. Why don't you grab your multipass, a drink, and come sit with us?
Let's pick each other's brain. We want you to be part of our intimate conversation about science fiction topics.
Let's do this. Join us, and let's talk about science fiction topics in books, movies, TV shows, and games.
At Science Fiction Remnant, you are invited to listen in.
Listen now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Audible, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
And don't forget your multipass.